the politics over Miami's embattled police chief, his effort to save his job, and how one of the wealthiest people in Haiti is connected to Jeffrey Epstein and South Florida real estate. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Miami Police Chief Art Acevedo hopes to keep his job with his plan to reform the department and fix the friction with some city commissioners, but he may be on his way out. The Miami City Commission officially may be nonpartisan, but it is political hardball that may cost the new chief his job. So how did the drama around the chief become such political theater? And then, the massive release of previously secret documents detailing how some of the world's wealthiest people move money around the world, including a billionaire in one of the poorest countries, Haiti. It's all ahead on the South Florida Roundup, made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening, and please continue making your contributions during our program. This week may not have had all the public meetings showcasing embarrassing videos or salacious accusations, but it was no less drama-filled over the fate of the Miami Police Chief Art Acevedo. He's been in the job for only 6 months, but faces a majority of city commissioners probing his prolific social media footprint, his tenure leading other police departments, and his feather-ruffling actions here, to put it diplomatically. The Miami Herald reports sources say the chief may be gone soon, but this week he turned in his plan to reform the department and his reputation. Let's talk about this with Danny Rivero, reporter here at WLRN, Glenna Milberg, reporter at WPLG Local 10 Television. To each of you, welcome back, Danny, for the second week in a row, talking about the chief here in Miami because the drama continues to unfold. How did this reform plan that he turned in this week, how did that come about?
Right. Well, it started basically last Friday. There was a commission meeting, and in that meeting, city manager Art Noriega, right. There's two Arts in this story, told commissioners that he asked the police chief to give him his new plan for fighting crime, bringing crime rates down. And it emerged in that meeting that up until now, the police chief never gave a crime fighting plan. The commissioners were surprised about that. Now, in the meantime, homicide rates so far this year are down. The chief points at that as evidence of his ongoing success. But that's basically where this came from.
What's included in the reform plan? I think it was, two dozen pages long. This was not a plan that was presented as part of his hiring process, his recruitment process. It comes 6 months after he's already been on the job.
Right. So the plan is to reduce gun violence. They're going to flood police officers in high crime areas, mm-hmm. specifically high areas with prevalent gun violence. They're going to start tackling illegal liquor sales, which frequently leads to crime in different kind of ways. They want to do an employee survey to kind of test the police morale. And the hardest part of this is improve relations with the city commissioners. And the plan right now is after 90 days, maybe all this blows over, for the chief of police to actually go and meet with these city commissioners who he's had very intense back and forth, very public back and forth, and improve those relationships with the city government.
Glenna Milberg with PLG Local 10. What do you think? What was the initial reception from this?
Hi everyone. You mean the initial reception of the memo?
Of the memo, right, the reform plan. Yeah, we'll talk about more of the theater coming up, but just, you know, looking forward as the city manager's action said, we'll get the report from the police chief. And how did that land?
That's an interesting question, because there is radio silence on all parts. The memo, we were actually at City Hall in the lobby when what I've been calling the Come to Jesus meeting occurred earlier this week. Art Noriega, the manager, walked in, said no comment. The police chief walked in right up at 2:00 for the meeting and literally told us he had been issued a gag order, so couldn't talk, told us that we would only have one side of the story. The memo itself, the statement that came out afterwards, and I use statement because that's what it was, a written statement, which I always think of as more PR crafted marketing than actual news. But that when that's the only thing reporters have, that's kind of what we have to sort of put out there. And the statement from the manager said, hey, you know, we're reviewing it. Had a couple of more questions, which the chief is going to answer. And it was just all up in the air. But I think the bigger picture, really, if I may, is that this is political theater. And you know, when you want to address that, we will.
Yeah.
But the memo is sort of a tool in an ongoing political theater.
Yeah, and it's the latest tool that's been kind of put into this this toolbox. And what struck me, Glenna, about the memo that the police chief wrote, Chief Acevedo wrote in this to commissioners, that was the audience for this memo, after all. He wrote, quote, I probably moved too quickly to affect change and engage publicly. Now, he was known and still is known as a prolific social media poster, a user of Twitter, clearly on YouTube, as we saw last week. Was this, Glenna, you first and then Danny, is this contrition on the part of the police chief?
I think it's, I think it's public contrition. I think it's part of when your boss says, hey, you better apologize, you apologize. And I think, you know, Miami kind of saw what it was getting, and Chief Acevedo, I don't think there was any surprises when the day he came on board. He's got a persona, he's big, he's brash, he's kind of a loose cannon. That's part of his charm and part of his downfall. That's kind of a double-edged sword. Downfall for sure in the Miami contingent who wants him gone. But after he was doing what he does, he was sort of forced to say, hey, you know, you are not the boss here. Here are the bosses. Mm. They want you to apologize. And so I don't want to make it sound like I don't think he's sincere, because I do think on some level he's very sincere. He came in to do what he was tasked to do. And then he found other people in Miami thinking, that's not what we want you to do, and we're the ones in charge. So he told me, I mentioned this on the air, he told me, not recently, but back when I was just chatting with him when he first came on board, he said, boy, it's like working in the Game of Thrones. And it is.
Yeah, I mean, overall, what's happened over the last week or so with the chief of police is he's really had to come to terms with the fact that he does not run the show. You know, this is not a sheriff's office. He's not the top of the department. He's not the elected official. He has a boss, and he's been very much put in his place by the city commission calling these meetings, by the city manager saying, hey, you got to do something, you know, otherwise this is not looking good for anyone. So that's basically where we are. He's not running the show. He's been gagged. He has to,
which is a very unnatural place for Chief Acevedo to be in. He's very glib. He's been very vocal. He'll talk to reporters of all stripes and share his cell phone number to be able to make comments when journalists and others would like him to be.
Right. I mean, that has been his public persona, and there's a lot of elements of truth to it. I've ran into him just out and about in the streets, and he'll chat me up. You know, say whatever about anything on the table. There does not seem to be any rails on it, which did ruffle some feathers in the past in the police departments. But in this city, in this context, it's rubbing some people very much the wrong way.
All right, so let's get into that. We're going to do that next. Glenna, stick with us. Glenna Milberg from Local 10 is with us. Danny Rivero from WLRN News with us. Coming up, the hardball politics of policing in Miami on this special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup. It continues with your contributions next.
You're listening to a special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. This is Evan Snow, proud community builder, arts advocate, and creative entrepreneur, born and raised here in Broward County, Florida. You can make your donations to continue to support programs like this by calling 866-247-9576. Now here's Tom Hudson.
Thanks so much for your help, Evan. Thanks for your support, being a contributor here at WLRN. And please continue making your donations during our program today. Miami Mayor Francis Suarez called Art Acevedo the Michael Jordan of police chiefs. Now, Suarez courted Acevedo to take over the Miami PD, circumventing the usual process of public and private interviews and considering internal candidates. The mayor has been awfully quiet since three city commissioners have turned up the heat on the police chief, who has fired officers, demoted others, and called the people running the police department the, quote, Cuban mafia. Now, Acevedo has apologized for that last one. The politics of policing in Miami pits this once former city mayor, now a commissioner, against the current mayor, who's the son of a former mayor. All right, so there is your chessboard for all of this. Let's talk about it with Danny Rivero, with WLRN, Glenna Milberg, with WPLG Local 10 Television. Danny, how'd we do there, setting that up, right? A former mayor, who's now a commissioner, who actually lost an election to the father of the current mayor.
And the current mayor used to be a commissioner.
That's right.
That's the chessboard. I think we did it pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that this breaks down is there's a majority of the members of the city commission, the three Cuban Americans, that have really taken offense to some actions and statements, the Cuban mafia one in particular,
yep,
by the police chief, and they've turned up the heat. And Mayor Francis Suarez, this was his guy.
Right.
When he came in, he said this. You know, they held a whole press conference. They said, we're getting the best of the best. You know, Chief Acevedo is the head of the major cities chiefs association, yep, in the whole U.S. still.
Yep.
While he's in the hot seat, the mayor said that's a vote of confidence from all these other city chiefs. So we're getting the best of the best. And as the pressure is cranked up, he's really taken a step back. He's started to defer just to the city manager, you know, let the city manager do what he wants to do. I talked to the mayor a few weeks ago before this really hit the fan, and he said, yeah, I support the police chief. He hedged a little bit and said, I also support the commission for doing whatever they want to do, but I support the police chief. You're not hearing that anymore.
Yeah. Glenna, the lead voice on the commission is Commissioner Joe Corroyo, who was the former Miami mayor, who is now the commissioner, who's been leading this public investigation, the public criticism of the choice of police chief from Mayor Suarez. Describe the relationship between the once former mayor, now commissioner, Joe Corroyo, and the once former commissioner, now mayor, Mayor Suarez.
You mean the relationship at this moment?
Sure, sure.
Because things change. So we're all talking about not only a chess game, but a 3D chess game. Yeah. So I think what you're seeing now is, you know, we're talking about how the chief was hired, sort of surprise. We went to Houston and plucked him out of Houston and brought him here. And all the while was happening, there was the usual process going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of three department veterans up for who made the shortlist to be the next chief. And while all of this was going on for months, surprise, the mayor went to Houston, brought the manager, brought in this outsider. And remember, the outsider chief was tasked with, quote unquote, reforming what was an entrenched veteran police department that they thought needed reforming for whatever reason. So now you have, to your question, Joe Corroyo and Commissioners Alex Diaz de Portilla and Manolo Reyes, three of the five. And I think, you know, from my reporting, they were being approached by a lot of the veterans in Miami PD. You had an acting chief in Ron Papier, who was one of the people summarily fired when Acevedo came in. And I think they went to the commissioners and said, hey, commissioners, you know, this is wrong. Look what the outsider is doing to us. Do something about it. And that's when you saw last week what seemed like sort of an inquisition. Joe Corroyo literally spoke for
five hours to build
a case. And my impression is that's what they were doing. They were building a case to get rid of the outsider.
Right. In making the hire, one of the things the city manager was important is that if you want reform, and I've talked to criminologists and people that follow this stuff, if you're going to reform any organization, the best way to do that is to bring someone from the outside, because they're going to come in with a clean slate. They don't have the clique. They don't have the people they go to lunch with. They don't have allegiances,
mm-hmm,
and they can come in and they could you know, they could shake things up, and then what's it to them? It's not their buddies. And on some level, the city manager said that's what needed to be done.
And perhaps not only the city manager, right? I mean, the police department in Miami, in the city of Miami, only recently got out from under a consent decree from the Department of Justice. That consent decree was dropped, I believe it was in February of this year, just 3 months before Art Acevedo came in as the outsider. A month before. And this was a consent decree that was put into place, what, 4 or 5 years or so ago, Danny, about concerns about excessive force on the department.
Right. There was a string of police shootings, especially in 2010 and 2011, that got on the DOJ's radar. It took them a couple of years to put them under oversight. But the general consensus from city leadership was that the job's not done. Just because the feds started looking elsewhere doesn't mean that you're done. And so when Chief Acevedo came on, it was very much, okay, we're out of federal oversight, but we have to shake things up, you know, internally inside the police department. And in doing that, he ruffled some feathers, especially of this senior leadership that Glenn is saying started whispering in the ears of the commissioners. You know, those were the people that had something to lose in this instance.
Yeah. And Glenna, how about the accusation or the complaint from Chief Acevedo that the three commissioners that you mentioned have, in the chief's estimation, have interfered with police investigations?
Quite the preemptive strike, was it not?
Yes.
Well, what was interesting is that, you know, there's a couple of, I know you have such a broad range of listeners, and the nitty gritty details are fascinating, but they don't all get out there, because what's also fascinating are these headlines and sort of that 3D chess game you just set up. But a couple of the investigations that were going on in IA went in internal investigations. Yeah. When the new chief came on, that he sort of got the ball rolling. One of them was this sergeant at arms. His name is Luis Camacho, who was fired. And one of them was the Papiers, Ron, the acting chief, and his wife, who had been in this little car incident that hadn't been reporting. So all of these little things that were going on in internal affairs, according to the chief, now the commissioners, Joe Carollo, wanted to know about them. And they're the elected bosses, right? So they wanted to know about them and what kind of influence they may or may not have exerted. All is alleged in this memo.
Right.
And what Chief Acevedo did as a new outsider chief is something that I think, and Danny, you know, maybe you know better, I think is unprecedented. There has never been a Miami police chief that wrote public allegations of corruption against very strong, powerful, vocal commissioners. So we were thinking either he's setting himself up as a whistleblower, or he's just taking it to the public. And either way, it is ugly.
Right. I mean, there's a whole range of allegations here, you know, that they're actually interfering in these internal affairs investigations. The chief put himself in charge of IA investigations when he came on,
right,
which really gave him the green light, in his opinion, to make those calls, to fire some officers, demote some people. But then there's also a wide range of allegations of misconduct, in that the commissioners are trying to influence police investigations. Some of those allegations are actually not true. Some of these things have been around for quite a long time, actually, several years. But the police chief has not presented public evidence, or to the city manager, at least according to what he said publicly, to back that up. But on some level, this is not new. Well, the public has known about a lot of these allegations for a long time. But the chief saying it and openly inviting the FBI and the DOJ to look into it and get involved, that's a... You know, someone threw a bomb in the room there.
That's another move altogether. And to do it as publicly versus to do it privately or quietly, all but inviting the Department of Justice kind of back into the room in this case. What do we know about how these allegations, these complaints that have been leveled against the three elected Miami City commissioners from the chief of police, how have these complaints landed with the feds?
Well, we know they landed. That was confirmed. Right. They absolutely landed. I just want to throw out there, as a reporter, Danny's a reporter, all of us in local television and newspapers are following this or trying to. There is definitely a campaign behind the scenes to sway public opinion, and we are all tools of that. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you very sincerely, I am so mindful and so careful of not reporting every little thing I hear and know without vetting it myself and getting the documents and crossing T's and I's, because there's a lot out there that I suspect may be disinformation.
Oh, absolutely. So, if I can just jump in there. Sorry, Glenna, but some of the things that Commissioner Carollo was sharing on the record, some of that was just unsubstantiated. You know, they were talking about the chief wanted to change uniforms, which is widely supported in the police department. Mm-hmm. And he made these allegations that, you know, maybe he has a personal connection to the company from Massachusetts. No, like there's nothing to support that.
Yeah.
Yet it was said publicly and some people are paying attention to it. But to Glenna's point, there's all this onslaught of information and it's hard to sort through all of it.
Yeah, and that's you know, it's what our jobs are, right, as journalists, is to sort through the myths and the disinformation and get to the facts and the empirical evidence of all this. So what's the next step in this? We had the 2 days of public hearings last week. We had the reform plan this week. The Miami Herald reporting that sources don't think that the chief will be in the job through next week. What's the next step that we know officially, Danny?
Well, I've talked to some people in City Hall on background sources of mine too, and it seems to be the consensus that it will be a very hard thing for the police chief to survive something like this, to keep his job in the long term. In the short term, there's not a third meeting that's been called, which we are kind of thankful for.
Yeah.
But you know, it's basically in the city manager's hands at this point. You know, is he going to back up the police chief and then risk that the city commission could fire him because they could take his job away?
Right.
Or is the police chief going to have to take one for the team and be pushed out? I mean, we don't know.
Well, and Glenna,
remember, if I could just jump in there,
please.
Remember that in the contract, the chief can be fired, of course, at any time. If he's not fired for cause, Miami taxpayers are on a hook for a lot of money for him.
Yep.
And that's why I think last week's meeting, what the commissioners might have been doing is trying to find a case for cause, because then he gets no money if he's fired for cause. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be really tough to prove cause with anything they've brought up so far.
Yeah, not to mention there is a federal lawsuit filed by a pair of businesses in Little Havana, which kind of cross-pollinates with some of these allegations of misconduct. And they're asking for $28 million because of city misconduct. You know, when all the chips are on the table and when this is all said and done, who knows how much this could cost taxpayers? It could be a lot of money, potentially. It could be a lot of money taxpayers will have to spend.
Dana Rivero, reporter for us here at WLRN. Glenna Milberg, reporter and host at WPLG Local 10 Television. Glenna and Danny, always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Tom.
All mine. Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
You as well. Stick with us here. Lots more ahead on the South Florida Roundup, the Pandora Papers, and the connection to South Florida. That's next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. This is a special pledge edition of our program, and continue making your donations to support programs like this during our conversation. Thank you for that support. For 2 years, more than 600 journalists across the globe combed through leaked financial documents that unveiled a vast web of secretive offshore financial activity. The investigation is known as the Pandora Papers. It's published 5 days ago. Prominent people from nearly every corner of Latin America and the Caribbean have been found to shield or hide wealth using shell companies or foreign banks. Some of that money has made it to South Florida. Wealthy Caribbean businessmen, Latin pop stars, even a high-ranking Roman Catholic cardinal from the Vatican were found to have used these methods, cloaked in secrecy, to buy property here. So let's talk about the South Florida connection to the Pandora Papers and the Caribbean connection as well. Brenda Medina joins us, reporter with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists behind the Pandora Papers. Brenda, welcome back to WLRN. Nice to have you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
What prompted this deep, deep investigation with just reams and reams and reams of terabytes of paperwork?
Yeah, so ICIJ, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers, and ICIJ has done this, has a tradition of doing this. It received a leak of all these millions of records, and it shared it with more than 500, almost 600 journalists around the world. And it's under the belief that this information is in the public interest. A lot of this information should be public because it involves world leaders, but isn't. And that was what inspired the investigation.
12 million documents. Describe what were some of the themes that these journalists were able to uncover as you looked through these previously secret paperwork?
So some of the findings include 300 public officials, among them presidents and heads of state, 35, I think 13 of them current leaders. The documents include a lot of records from offshore companies, from, you know, companies that are in countries that are not the country in which the person resides. There were also a lot of images, and but it was mostly information about offshore companies belonging to, you know, these public officials, but also billionaires and singers and soccer players.
Yeah,
everyone who has a lot of money.
Yeah, pretty remarkable the breadth and scope of the investigation, and also what was found in terms of leaders in politics and in arts and culture, business and industry, really across the spectrum. Jacqueline Charles is with us as well. She covers Haiti and the Caribbean for our news partner, the Miami Herald. Jackie, always a pleasure to have you on. Haiti is involved in some of these companies and some of these individuals. This investigation spread across more than 100 countries. How is Haiti involved? How is it involved in some of these papers and these shell companies and the movement of wealth?
Well, what we definitely found with the Pandora Papers is, like, you had 18 countries in Latin America that were starred in these with nearly 100 politicians and officials. In the particular case of Haiti, we saw the former prime minister, Laurent Lamothe, who has been attached to several companies, offshore companies, that were featured in the papers. He has since come out sort of denying that he had a relationship with these companies while he was serving as prime minister during the, you know, roughly 2 years that he was there. But we also see there are a number of prominent Haitians, and one of which we featured at the Miami Herald is Gilbert Bijou, who basically is the Haitian billionaire, if not the richest, one of the richest individuals in Haiti. There isn't anything in Haiti that doesn't really touch his empire. He has property here in South Florida, basically lives here. And what you saw is that, you know, he operates with shell companies. I mean, I was saying to my colleagues, he, you know, he does his politics like he does his business, you know, with shells, where you hardly see his hands. And so I think that that was one of the things that was really interesting, at least from our region, is we saw how the wealthy in many of these countries, and in particular in a poor country like Haiti, how they basically shield their wealth either from tax collectors, the government, or from competitors, or from others. And that was the revelation that we saw there with him.
Yeah, Jackie, I was going to mention shielding from whom exactly, you know, who is it that would like to see this information, and more than just out of curiosity, but rather out of even legal concerns or questions about it.
Well, exactly. I mean, we know that we are in a region where, you know, oftentimes people amass wealth through illegal means. But I think there's also a very large theme, which is shielding their wealth from tax liability. You know, when you look at, again, like Haiti, it's a country where very little taxes are collected. And, you know, in Haitian business, people have a saying among themselves, you have one tax book for yourself, for your wife, and for the government. And so if you're not really revealing how much you're actually collecting or making, then you're not necessarily paying, you know, what you owe in taxes. I will say that people we've talked to in the case of Bijol says, you know, he's a very good employer. He treats his employees well. But yet people are startled at in terms of the amount of wealth and the fact that that wealth is not in Haiti, but it's being operated and held outside of the country.
Right, right. And particularly at this moment in Haiti with the political turmoil, the assassination of the president, the earthquake, the migrant crisis that had been going on the border and elsewhere, what is, you know, the reception that the Pandora Papers and the acknowledgement, the revelation of this billionaire and how he has used, some would argue, legal means to move money and shield money?
I have to tell you, interesting enough, in Haiti, people were more intrigued by, you know, the fact that former Prime Minister Laurent Lamont appeared in these papers because the fact that he held political office. And so people are sort of searching, wondering and asking, is this true? You know, looking for more information. I think with Bijol, people, you know that he's a billionaire or that he's very wealthy, weren't necessarily, you know, surprised. But I think, again, when we think about the Pandora Papers, the Panama Papers, and we think about the state that these countries are in, people can't help but ask yourselves, you know, if government had access to, you know, people's true wealth, you know, could we help the social situation in the country? You know, and aside from him, there are other Haitians who are also appeared, in, you know, in this paper. Right. And, you know, again, you say almost 12 million documents. So what did we also miss? You know, who else is there that we didn't catch?
Yeah. Brenda, how about that point that Jackie makes in terms of how governments are looking at the Pandora Papers? This is information, you know, tax authorities did not have. How is this being received by some of those authorities?
In some cases, yes, this is information that tax authorities did not have. A series of countries, including countries in Latin America, are now saying that they're going to investigate the people mentioned and revealed in this leak, and they're going to make sure that they comply with their tax responsibilities, or, you know, launch criminal investigations if they didn't. I think to add to Jackie's point, what this shows is how there is a system, a whole industry dedicated to helping the rich and powerful, you know, have access to a parallel economy that the rest of us don't have, you know, access to. And in many cases, it highlights, you know, why all these inequalities that Jackie's mentioning persist in our region and beyond.
Yeah. And Brenda, just a few seconds left here, but you mentioned, you know, this is the third type of massive leak like this, the Paradise Papers, the Panama Papers. Here we are with the Pandora Papers. Does it change? Does it begin to bend that curve as it continues to shine a light on this kind of shadow movement of assets?
There were some changes, important changes, regulatory changes, and you know, investigations after the Panama Papers. I think what this shows is that it's way bigger, you know, way larger than we thought, and more changes are needed.
Brenda, well, thank you for sharing the reporting with us. Great to have you back on the program. Brenda Medina, reporter with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the main thrust behind the Pandora Papers, and Jacqueline Charles, reporter for our news partner, the Miami Herald, covering Haiti, and wrote about some of the documents that were unearthed in the Pandora Papers. To Jackie and Brenda, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, this is Lavinia Cosenza from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup today. The show is produced by Andrea Perdomo. WLRN's engagement editor is Katie Lepre-Cohen. Lance Dixon is WLRN's digital editor. WLRN's news director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is WLRN's editorial director. The director of radio operations and show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Richard Ives answers phones.
Well, thanks for your help with our closing credits, Lavinia. Great to have you on board during our program here, our special pledge program of the South Florida Roundup. We appreciate everybody's help and support of WLRN and public broadcasting for all of South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Much appreciated. Thank you for listening here today. And thank you, of course, for supporting public broadcasting. Our program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.